Hello, this is Frank Peters. Thanks for tuning back in to CDM Cyclist. I have an interview today with John Luton in Victoria, British Columbia. Victoria, the capital of British Columbia. Victoria, notable. Rated in one study as the number one city in Canada for bike and ped to work. So, going to enjoy getting to know John. I had an additional motivation, as you'll hear. I'm planning a family trip. I'm just days away from taking the family, my wife, my two boys, up to Seattle, hop on the ferry over to Victoria, where we rent bicycles for a week, and it's all bicycles and ferries. No automobiles for a week. Should be fun. We're staying in some nice hotels along the way, so it's not exactly roughing it, but should be nice. Should be a beautiful time of year in Victoria and the San Juan Islands. John and I met in a different context, and I'll get to that as we get into the interview. Well, let's get started. Here's John. Well, John, just in your email signature, you have so many links. We're going to spend a few minutes and talk about many of those links. I'm sure there's stories about all of them. But first, as we get started here this morning, let me say thank you. You and I made contact some while ago, and you sent me several maps of Victoria. Thanks very much.
No problem.
I've got the Galloping Goose and Lochside trails here. I reached out to you because I'm planning a family vacation. My 60th birthday is coming up in just a few weeks.
Oh, boy.
Taking the whole family to Victoria for 8 days. It's all bikes and ferries for that week. So
wonderful.
Thanks very much. Now, Victoria is a suitable place to do this, right, John?
It sure is. It's a wonderful place to ride.
Yeah. Now, I was on a previous trip to Halifax just a couple of months ago. I came across some statistics on Canadians' livability of Canadian cities, and Victoria jumped out as number one in bike and walk. You can confirm that too, John?
Absolutely. By orders of magnitude, we're the best city for biking in Canada in terms of the share of traffic that we have.
What causes, you know, Victoria to be so well-suited or so popular for pedestrians and cyclists, John? What made that happen?
Well, I mean, some of it's organic. Some of it is our investments in infrastructure and programs. I mean, the issue of winter comes up for some people, although the next closest cities for cycling and walking are in Saskatoon and Kingston, both which have nasty winters. So there's some other factors obviously at work.
Those are East Coast cities?
No, Saskatoon's in Saskatchewan. It's in the middle of the prairies, and it's got a very harsh winter.
Yeah.
But like Victoria, and this is one of the organic advantages of the city, is it's relatively small, geographically contained. So travel distances for commuters will not be so far that they're unachievable by bike.
Mm-hmm.
Kingston, likewise, is in Ontario. It's on Lake Ontario, but it does get winter. But again, a smaller, geographically contained city, a university town. So
that always helps, yeah.
That helps. Victoria is the capital city of British Columbia, but we do have a big university community here as well. But our weather advantage is one of them. We don't get much of a winter. You know, if we got a couple of days of snow every year, that just reminds us we're still in Canada.
That's just a novelty, right? Yeah.
Yeah. More typically, it's wet and gray. and it'll get chilly, but there's no deal breaker for hiding in the winter. So that does help. Just across the Strait of Georgia in Vancouver, though, in the metropolitan area, their mode share for cycling is about a third of what it is in Victoria.
Oh, and they get a lot of notoriety for their cycling community. So that says a lot, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's, you know, there's a lot of details that explain some of the issues. I mean, the larger metropolitan area of Vancouver is about over 2 million people, and you've got a very spread out population. So if you're in the core of the city, cycling use is very high. And in the far-flung suburbs, the travel distances and the traffic density is such that it discourages cycling. Victoria is about 360,000-odd, and our suburbs are there's some more distant suburbs, and cycling mode share drops as you move out of the core area. But still, for a lot of people, those distances for commuters, anyways, are achievable by bike. And the map that I sent you of the Galloping Goose and the Lochside Trail is a major contributor, I think, to what we've been able to achieve with the rest of the on-road infrastructure that we've built to connect people once they've been using the trails into the main road network to get to their destinations.
Mm-hmm. So we should mention that the Galloping Goose and the Lochside are off-road trails, huh?
For the most part. The first few hundred meters of the Galloping Goose and Lochside downtown are on the road, but it's you're on the trail quickly enough. Pieces of the Lochside are also on road, but you know, it's a quieter back road. But both the Goose and the Lochside parallel our major highway corridors. So mm-hmm. The accessibility for cyclists to major trip generators and destinations in the region is very much equivalent to what is enjoyed by drivers. So there's a lot of utility there, and having that access to safe and convenient systems certainly helps to generate interest in cycling. And as we add to the on-road network, it just brings more people into the system.
I can imagine, John. Now, I have only ridden on Halifax's Rails to Trails, and that was just, again, a short while ago. So I'm new at this. And one thing I was delighted to discover is these former rail lines are very low grade. If you're going up, you can barely detect it a lot of times. Is that typical in Victoria too?
Yes, the trails are pretty flat. You know, there's a couple of hills in there where there's an overpass or the old rail bridge disappeared. You know, that's usually some distance from the downtown area out in the rural area. So mm-hmm. it's not a big long climb. So the accessibility of those rail grades for the trails is obviously very useful. Mm-hmm. The city itself is, on the roads there are hills. We're not as steep as San Francisco or Seattle or Vancouver, and the hills tend not to be long. So I guess that's an advantage as well.
Mm-hmm. You know, as I planned this, or I started planning a bicycle getaway, I first started designing a trip for, say, me and some of my riding buddies, you know, other guys. And I started out with like a 14-day trip, and they all complained that that's too long. And so I kept trying to shrink, you know, the route and be a little bit less ambitious. And then somewhere along the line, I suspected that my bike riding buddies might not really join me after all, and my concept switched to how could I make a one-week trip as easy as possible and bring the family along. And boy, once I made that switch, I was really, you know, happy to, discover all of these benefits of bicycling around Victoria.
Oh yeah, there's a lot.
Yeah, we're gonna take the luck side at the end of a few days in Victoria, take that up to Sydney, take the ferries over to the San Juan Islands. It's been
right.
A few days.
There's a lot of cycling on the San Juan Islands, and it's a very popular destination for local and visiting cyclists alike.
It's going to be anyway, very excited about that, and thank you for contributing several maps you sent to me, John.
Right. No problem.
And then there was something else that fell into my hands once upon a time, John. It was a brochure on bike racks. And that came from you too, John, right?
Yeah, probably.
Tell me a little bit about that. That was basically like a design guide for municipalities thinking about installing bike racks. It was a great, great piece put together.
Thanks. Well, it's a project I did several years ago, and I'm trying to find time to update the resource as an online reference guide. It's online now, but it needs updating and needs some additions. But I've been doing the cycling advocacy stuff for numbers of years, and one of the challenges for particularly for commuter cyclists is, what do I do when I get to my destination? I've got to put this somewhere safe in terms of the security of the bike, but also with the design of racks and other parking solutions, something that physically protects the bike from damage. And here in Victoria, we ran into an issue with the city at the time. This goes back to the 90s. Where the racks in use were attractive but not particularly functional for bicycle parking. And I'd just come back from Santa Barbara, where there was a bike conference, and started pushing on the inverted U design and immersed myself in the world of bike parking nerds so that I could promote the idea that this is very low-hanging fruit. It's easy to do. It's not rocket science. But people consistently get it wrong, and we needed to push forward on finding better solutions. So I managed to corral some funding to publish that manual and put out several thousand of them, and they're all over Vancouver, and it's been used as a guide to develop their bike parking standards, and then it finds its way into the hands of people across Canada and obviously beyond as well.
Well, add Newport Beach to the list. I took my one and only copy, and after I cherished it for a while, I gave it over to my friends in Public Works at Newport Beach.
Oh, great.
So.
Well, it's just a useful tool to have to make sure that, for developers or municipal governments and other property management types to have a quick and easy reference guide on what rack do I choose, what site planning do I need to do, what sorts of things do I need to think of, because the informal bike parking on trees, utility poles, lamp standards, or whatever else people will lock it to does cause problems in the urban environment. It's not ideal for cyclists, and in many cases, it starts to compromise the pedestrian environment.
That's right.
Well.
That's right. Like yesterday, for example, I am running an errand at the local hardware store, and I start out back just to confirm, there are no bike racks behind the store. So then I go out to the front on the busy sidewalk and have to chain up to a some sign pole there. And it's less than ideal because there's limited parking there. And it does compromise the pedestrian space. Well, John, you've got this little guide online. So you and I will chat as we wrap up here, and I'll put that link to the bike racks brochure in the show notes that will accompany this interview, so my listeners can find that.
Wonderful.
John, let's start working your email signature, other things that I've been able to find out about you for conversation starters.
Right.
City councilor. Tell me about that. You're involved in city government.
Well, I was up until last November when the voters issued me a pink slip. So I'm out now looking for a real job in the job market. My wife would prefer that I have something with benefits and a stable income.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I'd love to do more of the bike advocacy stuff, but that's something that's going to have to happen off the corner of whatever desk I land at. Because it's hard to generate a good income there, and the kids have braces and all the things that that come with raising a family have costs attached to them. So I think we can
all relate to that, John.
Yes.
This bicycle advocacy is. Someone taunted. I was at the League of American Bicyclists conference a year ago, and somebody taunted the all of us gathered, saying, "All that cash you guys are generating, huh?"
Yeah, that's right.
You got to. Right. It's like that old joke: is how do you make a small fortune in the wine business? You start with a large fortune, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, that helps.
So city council was good for 3 years, and I managed to help advance some positive steps on cycling and walking and some other issues that I care about. So it was a great time, and perhaps I'll run again, but for now it's looking at what else I can do.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you recommend, John, that other advocates that might be somewhat politically motivated to make that leap as well?
Sure. I mean, it's a great way to influence public policy and deliver on the ground infrastructure changes and services that can help advance a sustainable transportation agenda. And certainly at the local government level, if you're interested in cycling or walking, or I've also been working on transit issues, that's where a lot of the decisions are made. At the provincial or federal level in Canada, there's less of a hands-on opportunity than there is at local government, where you control land use planning and roads and things like that, so you can see the impacts of your decisions, and that's somewhat satisfying.
I can imagine, John, and I understand what you're saying too. I think, you know, in the world of advocacy, I've chosen to focus very locally myself. You can see things happen.
Yes, absolutely, and you can reach out and touch them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can point them out to somebody.
Yeah. Now, it just seems to me there's a little bit of like bicycle envy, I suppose. I'm often looking north, you know, I just spent a week in Portland, Oregon. And of course, the experience there is fantastic for cyclists. I've been to Vancouver and Halifax and so many northern climbs coming to Victoria. The southern, you know, parts of North America have some catching up to do. And it starts with the political environment. Like you were saying, being involved in, as a city councilor, have a chance to influence that. Now, here in the United States, it seems like in politics in general, we're divided, where it's quite contentious no matter what the issue. Everything seems to be black and white. And it would be a challenge to run on a pro-bike platform, I think, perhaps in my neighborhood or in Orange County in general, because there's sometimes there's animosity between cyclists and automobile motorists. You observe that, John, too, right? Is that universal?
Oh, yes, it's all over the place. I mean, people are accustomed or have grown accustomed to having unimpeded access to the landscape to build more asphalt to move or store their cars. And when you start chipping away at that, you're chipping it away at a sense of entitlement that...
it's a little bit the Wild West mentality comes to mind as I'm listening to you, John, right? It is an entitlement, and unimpeded is a good word for it. Asphalt everywhere,
Well, 35 to 40% of North American cities are typically dedicated to the movement and storage of motor vehicles. I think Los Angeles down there is closer to 60% of all your landscape is paved over to move cars around.
Sure. I've heard big numbers too. I'm not sure what it is, but I wouldn't dispute that. Yeah.
No, it's a huge number. Waste of land.
I've seen some aerial imagery of Los Angeles and all the parking structures highlighted in red, and the whole damn city looks pink.
I bet.
Yeah. So, John, let's move on. Cycle Vancouver Island, is that kind of like a Chamber of Commerce kind of emphasis there, or is that your advocacy at work?
Well, that's more on the tourism side, and mm-hmm. that's stumbled along over the last few years while I was on council, and perhaps if I could crank that up again, it would help take advantage of the wave of interest in cycling tourism. But that was an effort to build a map and a promotion to celebrate and promote Vancouver Island as a cycling destination. And mm-hmm. certainly the effort helped to build an awareness and make contact with people really around the world. And, I had a few years back, a couple from Scotland come and take me out for dinner for all the advice I'd help provide them, and I helped set up a tour for them up and down Vancouver Island and across to the Sunshine Coast on the the mainland. And when you're coming to a place that you're unfamiliar with, having that on the ground knowledge about that goes beyond a map, because a map can only tell you so much. You need, if you're a cycling tourist, you really need to understand the lay of the land much more so than something on paper is likely to give. But there's also an awareness building for potential cycling tourists, but also for the business community and the governance community on the island who, up until recently haven't really understood the enormous potential of marketing to a cycle tourism community that is always looking for new places to ride.
Exactly.
And always looking for places to eat and to drink. And we've got lots of those in Victoria. So if you're in the food services industry, for example, you want more bike tourists. Like, we're always hungry, we're always thirsty. We always order dessert, so there's profits to be made there.
That's right, yes. And as I'm listening to you, John, I'm thinking of perhaps next year's big cycle journey for me is going to be Prince Edward Island. And they get it on PEI. I mean, their tourism package I sent away for it, they've figured out that cycling tourists are what makes their island go. There's no doubt on PEI that cyclists are a way to go. So that sounds like an opportunity. As I look at, I'm on the Facebook site right now, and I'll tell you, the photographs, I'll have links to this in the show notes too. I mean, this is catnip for anybody in Southern California, megalopolis here, or any large city. You see these off-road images here, and man, I can't wait to see myself in those same environments.
Oh, great. No, there's lots of good riding.
Mm-hmm. Capital Bike and Walk, John. Yep, tell me about that.
That's the my advocacy nonprofit, and I use that to work with or push at local governments or other public agencies or the private sector, for that matter, to do the things that we need to do to grow participation in cycling and make it safer and more appealing as a transportation choice. So, you know, one of the projects I've been involved in over the last 12 or 13 years is opening up a new trail facility. And perhaps by the time you get here, more of that will be in place. And it runs alongside our railway in the connects Victoria to points up Vancouver Island, and there's a stretch of that in the Victoria area that is completed, but they're filling in the gaps and building more of that facility. So we'll have another trail facility, and then I work at the bike parking stuff sometimes as a consultant through Capital Bike and Walk with a local engineering firm who sometimes brings me into their projects to say we're working on this reconfiguration project for whatever municipality, and I'll come in and say, well, here are some of the treatments or the design features that you might want to consider to make it more bicycle or pedestrian friendly. Or I'll go at municipalities and say, you've got a put in bike lanes here. You need more bike parking there. We need, you know, whatever it is that we need to add to the cycling environment to draw more people out.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good segue, John, into bicycle parking online? What's that all about?
Well, that's just the bicycle parking online is that manual that you've got. Is set up as an online resource, and then in fits and starts, I add to the resource so that you know, if you're looking for product information, for example, there's a whole list of suppliers, mostly around North America, but some European ones as well, so that you need a bike rack, you can, you know, find something close to where you live, because shipping is a cost issue. Mm-hmm. And find good racks. And then online, it can also tell you what's a good rack and what's a bad rack, so that you don't order the junk. Some suppliers still manufacture the less than ideal racks because sometimes that's what the architects and landscape designers are looking for.
Mm-hmm. I remember here in my hometown, when I first proposed the inverted U-rack, like you talk about, the counter argument from Public Works was some of the other racks were easier to install.
Right.
And I was a little bit flabbergasted when I heard that, of course, because the functionality is so deficient in the other ones. There's more to it than just the ease of installation. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the line I got back in 97 or 98 when we were pushing the inverted U, and the city standard at the time was the serpentine rack. Mm-hmm. It's not as – I mean, it's better than the concrete wheel benders, but doesn't provide the stability you need. But the answer back was – well, we like our rack. It looks very nice, especially when there's no bikes on it.
And there's a correlation there too,
It's like, hey, there's, you know, as street furniture, the intent is to provide bike parking, not to look good on the sidewalk.
That's a good one, John. That's a classic. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about switchbridgetours.com or .org?
Well, that's not my organization. That's just they're a local bike store that helps sponsor the cycle tourism initiative. So every time I send a message out, their little one-line ad gets in there.
Oh,
and they,
nice.
They pay for the privilege, but they have a shop very, like, 20 meters off the Galloping Goose, and they run local tours as well. So they do day trips or up. They take groups out to the nearby wine country, and they rent bikes and get people exploring the area. So they're a great partner to have.
Well, I'll check them out, John, as I make my final arrangements here. I'm very excited, and as I anticipate making this trip up there, John, I will reach out to you. Maybe you and I could meet for coffee or take a bike ride together. That would be, I would enjoy meeting you in person. And
sure, I'll be around.
And again, I'd like to say thank you. You've been a great help with both your bike rack design guide and these maps that you sent to me, John. It's really to be able to show those to my two boys and my wife, makes them, they can picture themselves on the trail, make them feel comfortable that they know what they're getting into. So thank you for that, too.
You're most welcome.
All right, John. Well, thanks so much for joining me on the show this morning.
Thank you, Frank.
We'll see you next month.
Okay, thanks. See you then.
All righty. Bye-bye, John.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're back in the studio, and Victoria sounds nice. Come by the website. You'll see links to the many URLs that John and I mentioned, his Facebook page, his Flickr account, where you see some gorgeous pictures. I think Vancouver Island has a great future as a destination for touring cyclists. I'm going to keep you posted. This is just the beginning of a series of posts, of course. Longtime followers will know I'll be talking about preparations for Victoria, renting the bikes, the whole experience. And remember, it started last year. I did a similar kind of trip with the family. You know, some family members had a good time, others not so much. So we'll see how this family getaway compares. It's bound to be better. I'll be sharing all of that in the posts in the days and weeks ahead. So come by the website, cdmcyclist.com, where you can leave a comment. John would love to hear from you, and so would I. Follow some of the links, too. I have links to bikenewportbeach.org, where myself and many of my bicycling buddies are chronicling their daily adventures on the bicycle. It's bikenewportbeach.org. Check it out, please. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks so much for listening, and bye-bye.